Blog Talk Radio.
This is Earth Ancient. I'm your host, Cliff Dunning. I hope you're doing well today. Hey, this is conference month, and I talked a little bit about it before. And not only are there huge, very interesting conferences around the country, but there seem to be back-to-back. Every week there's a conference. I've been invited to attend the Contact in the Desert. I talked a little bit about that. Have been talking about it, which is this coming Saturday, the 19th, 20th, and 21st. Actually, it even goes to the 22nd. I won't be around for the 22nd. But you got to hear this lineup. I mean, it is, man, it's killer. It's you got Eric Van Doneghan. You got the heavy hitters, Graham Hancock, Dr. Robert Schock, Robert Bavall, Michael Tellinger, Giorgio Tsoukalos from Ancient Aliens, Andrew Collins with Lee Strieber. Hey, and it's back-to-back daily conference workshops, and it's going to be held down in Joshua Tree. I have never been to Joshua Tree. It's in the desert. Last year, I interviewed Eric Van Doneghan around June when they had it, and it was miserable, apparently. It was like in the hundreds. And he had to end the interview early because he was so uncomfortable. He was like, "So I'm sitting here in a bath of my sweat." So this year it's cool weather. It's going to be nice. Hey, and you have a front row seat because I'm going to be interviewing a lot of these people. I'm going to be down there. I'm going to speak with Eric, which, by the way, his new book is Astronaut Gods of the Maya. And I just got a copy of it. I mentioned it before. This thing's filled with images of machinery, very, very unusual stonework, what they call stele, which were the Maya, they're markers for the Maya. They would mark the dates. They would mark the rulers in the time of those dates. They would talk about people and events. And he was down there like 40 years ago. Eric's almost 80, if you want to know his age. I think he's 79. But when he was down there, he was in Copan and he was in Tikal, which is in Guatemala and Honduras. And he was there when it was wide open. It was still poorly excavated. And he took photographs of things that you're not supposed to look at. I mean, if conventional archaeologists showed pictures of machine gears, people would be questioning what's going on, you know. So anyhow, you have a front row seat. If you can make it, I'd love to see you. You can go to Contact in the Desert, C-O-T-A-C-T, inthedesert.com. Take a look at the lineup. The tickets are a little spendy. For $250, you can see pretty much anything except for some of the special workshops, which, by the way, I mean, $250 is what I would pay. But if you're down there, look me up. I'll be walking around. I'll have my safari hat on. Check it out. Contact in the Desert. It's going to be a monster. I just finished an interview with Dr. Robert Schock and Robert Bavall. They have a brand new book called Origins of the Sphinx. This is going to be next week's show. And this book is quite an eye-opener. And it goes into a lot of new research on the Sphinx and this megalithic civilization that actually the temple wall and some of the buildings that surround them. And I didn't really know that these buildings are built with monolith size stones cut with to perfection. But these stones weigh on the average of 10 tons, and buildings were created around these stones. It's just, it's quite amazing. So anyhow, the book's called Origins of the Sphinx. It just came out just a couple of weeks ago, and I'm going to be raffling versions of it off. I talked to the publisher, Inner Traditions, and they gave me a case, people, 12 books. So I'll be raffling those off next week. So look forward to that. Earth Ancients is sponsored by Cosmic Origins. It's the next of the big conferences right after Content in the Desert. This is actually an up-close and personal opportunity to meet with Robert Bivol, Dr. Robert Schock. They're going to have Clifford Mahudi there, Gary Osborne, Alan Sheffield, William Henry's going to be there. William Henry's a great talk, great speaker. And J.J. Hertok and his wife Desiree are going to be giving an interesting talk. But the gist of this program is it's an opportunity for you to tour a lot of the ancient petroglyphs that are in the area. This is a Phoenix, Arizona conference, and if you want more information, you can go to World Z Media. It's World, the letter Z, media.com, and you can see the entire program. And this is a great time to be in Phoenix, May 26th to 28th. And these petroglyphs, I didn't realize how many there were. There's over 3,000 petroglyphs that are in that area. And they've been preserved, and this is a great opportunity just to check out what's going on in that part of the world. If you've been wondering what a petroglyph looks like, you can see it up close and personal. And, I mean, it's just a great program. So check it out. It is Cosmic Origins. It's going to be in Phoenix, Arizona. Go to worldviewzmedia.com. I think you're going to like it.
Of all the boys I've known, and I've known some.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Live from around the world, it's Earth Ancient News.
And there's a ton of stuff to check out this week. Always go to the Facebook page, Earth Ancients Facebook group, not international, group. Hey, I found this very, very interesting Hittite carving, and it's a crystal carving. And I was looking around for some artifacts, and I found this little carving, and it's an anomalous carving because this is a little figurine that's wearing a pilot suit. And when I say pilot suit, he has a full-on helmet that's been carved in this crystal. He's wearing what looks like a zero oxygen suit, and it's dated to be 1500 BC, so that's almost over 3,000 years that it was carved. And people have asked me when I posted this a few days ago, you know, I didn't know there was crystal carvings way back then. Well, I happened to find out that the Egyptians carved in crystal and the Maya carved in crystal. So crystal rock was carved a very, very long time ago. And there's some great examples of ancient sculpture. And this figurine is quite unique. And I blew them up so you can see a good detail. I mean, it's flat on a helmet. You know, I can't explain what else it would be. So that's on the Facebook page. The other thing for this week is we had Kara Yamaguchi on the show a few weeks ago talking about the monoliths of Japan. I have the Yonaguni Monument on a 360-degree image. And this is one of the coolest images I've ever seen. The photographer has set the camera on the floor just in front of the monument and has done a 360 of it. So you're looking up towards the surface of the water. I think it's about, looks like it's about 50 feet underwater. And you can see the huge walls of this monument. And there's no way that it's artificial. I mean, whoever says this thing is artificial is like, they're not really looking at it with any detail. And this is a great opportunity to see evidence of a very ancient culture in Japan up close and personal. It's a huge, huge monolith. And this photograph shows the geometrically cut angles and surface features on this gigantic monolith from the past. So that's on the Facebook page. Also, this week I've been getting emails from a new Facebook group. It's called Satellite Archaeology from Canada, and they have been posting amazing images of Africa. And this series that I posted is of African glyphs, which are only visible from the air, and they are gigantic. Some of these glyphs are, you know, they look like they're like half a mile square. So you can check that out. That's a whole gallery. I think there's 50 or more of these gigantic glyphs. Satellite Archaeology from Canada. So it's a new group that's going to be contributing regularly, and they're good. They really do a good job editing. I was really pretty impressed by some of the glyphs that they have on there. I haven't seen a lot of them. I just never seen them. Also, we have Forgotten Technology of the Past. It's a new video that was I just posted about I think 2 days ago, and this is an example of Egyptian and Mexican stonework on a megalithic size. I should say megalithic scale. And these are machine cuts. These are drilling, coring. It's some of the most amazing video I've ever seen. And you can see the entire video. It's about 30 minutes on the Facebook page. And, you know, if you have any sense of working with any kind of saws or drills or boring equipment, when you look at these videos, this one in specifically, Forgotten Technology from the Past, you can see it's fairly evident that these stones have been cut with saws. In fact, there's a few images of saw cuts that are so close to the stone that you can see evidence of where the blade actually was cutting into the stone. So check it out. Always go to Facebook, Earth Ancients. Go to the group page. You can go to the international page. I do post some stuff on there, but the group page has the real juicy stuff. So check that out. Hey, remember, we got a tour coming up to Mexico in the fall, October 28th. Through November 4th, I'm going to be taking people out with some tour guides to Uxmal, Ekbalam. And remember, Ekbalam, we climb to the top of that pyramid. And at the very top, there's some sculpture reliefs of really, really unusual figurines. In fact, they still go, well, yeah, those are kind of interesting. Well, these figurines are right out of India. There's a couple that have wings on them, which are kind of cool. And then there's one guy who I've taken multiple photographs of, and I've posted those. And this is an elongated head individual. He's got a monstrous cranium, and he is looks like he was either a political figure or a very well-known individual or somebody who was very important thousands of years ago. We can see that up close and personal. We'll climb a lot of other pyramids. We're going to go to Koba. One of my favorite places is Sayil. And Sayil is very unusual because it looks very Roman in a lot of ways. So, hey, and I've made this thing very inexpensive. Most tours are $2,800, $3,000. For just $1,400, you get to tour with me and special guides. We're going to have some video and some photographs that I'm going to present. Your dinners are covered. Most of your food's covered. You got a great hotel room right in the heart of Mérida, which is a kind of a colonial city. It's kind of lost in time. It's very, very cool. So I hope you come out and hang with me. October 28th, November 4th. Hey, by the way, that's also Day of the Dead. So we'll be right in the middle of that the celebration. Hey, bring your face paint. You could dress up like a skeleton. I think I'm going to do that. I've never done that before. That sounds very, very cool. So for more information, go to earthancients.com/tours. Or just go to Earth Ancients and look up tours. The entire itinerary is loaded there. And it's, hey, I only can take a few people. I think I can take maximum maybe 20 people. So get on to that. Come on, and let's do that, man. It's going to be a blast. I just love going to Mexico, and I think you're going to like it too. So this week we're bringing back someone we had a couple of weeks ago, Bruce Fenton. And Bruce wrote the book Forgotten Exodus, which got quite a bit of play and notice, not only from listeners to the show, but it seems like there's been a number of well-known authors, among them Graham Hancock, who has taken notice of Bruce's work and is going to feature him in June as the top author contributor to his website. But I wanted to check in with Bruce because he has a special announcement for us. And here's what he had to say. So many of you remember our guest last week, Bruce Fenton, and his intriguing book, Forgotten Exodus, the Into Africa Theory of Human Evolution. And as it turned out, Bruce created a little bit of a wildfire of interest. We had a tremendous amount of interest in his in Bruce's appearance on the show. We had a huge download of this the podcast. And I reached out to Bruce and I said, "Hey, Bruce, let's promote your book a little wider." And he thought about it. And we have Bruce on right now, and we're going to talk about a promotion that's going to be a limited promotion, but I'll let Bruce talk a little bit. Bruce, how you doing?
Hi, Cliff. I'm well, thank you. And it's, yeah, really a pleasure to come back on. I really enjoyed talking to you the other day. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Okay, so tell us about this promotion for Forgotten Exodus. It's sure. a special promo that you're going to offer through Amazon. So go ahead and what's the deal?
That's right. So as of the 1st of June, I'm going to run a free-day promotion of the book. So I'll be reducing the price to $1.99, and that'll be on Amazon and also on Smashwords, because I know some people don't like Amazon or they can't use the Kindle files. So they have an alternate there. If they go to Smashwords, they'll find the book on there as well. And yeah, so they have an opportunity to grab the book cheap at a bit less than half price. Okay. And that ties in also with another thing that I'm doing, which on the 1st of June, I will be going on Graham Hancock's website as author of the month. So there'll be an opportunity for people to know to sort of grab the book cheap, but also to come on the forum and ask me questions and, you know, discuss the information in the book directly with me. So,
wow.
So I'll be tying those two together.
Congratulations. That's not a, small feat. That's a big deal for him to acknowledge you as the author of the month. Was it based on an article or just the actual reception of the book so far?
Yeah, no, he's Graham's read the book, and you know he's expressed you know his support for the work in there, and shared it on his social media already with you know both on Twitter and his Facebook page. So yeah, he's been really awesome. You know, obviously you know he doesn't have to do that; he doesn't owe me anything, and so that's been totally awesome. I've reached you know a lot of people that I would have, I guess, paid huge amounts of advertising money to try and reach, you know. That's been great. So I'm really looking forward to going on there.
That's a great endorsement. So this is an ebook, and approximately, how many pages is it again? It's 81.
I think probably about 81 of text. You know, there's some index in there and whatnot, but I'm not sure. It's confusing because sometimes I've seen it. I think it came up somewhere saying it was 115 or something. But I guess it depends on if it's done by the word pages or by how they calculate on Amazon. You know,
I think it's the formatting too, isn't it? How it's formatted, how it appears on the actual screen. So, okay, well that's great. So there you go, folks. Bruce Fenton's new book. It's a hot item right now, Forgotten Exodus, and there you go. You can get a copy of it. And when is the stop date? So they have what, approximately a week to do?
Oh, do free. Well, I'm like 3 days. I think it's going to be 72 hours. So there's a little bit of pressure there.
Not a huge amount, but 3 days.
So,
okay.
So 3 days. Yeah, from the 1st of June to the 3rd of June. You know, maybe a little bit over that, but you know, if they try and get on for within those 3 days. And obviously, like I say, they'll be able to jump in the forums at, you know, grahamhancock.com as well and have a, you know, have a discussion, which, and there is a possibility, I should forewarn, more pressure, but there's a possibility that I might be getting asked to extend this book, you know, for publishing as print, which means I might have to take it down at some point after that. So people that want to read the work now, you know, I would advise them to sort of jump on that, because otherwise you might be waiting a few additional months for, you know, a longer print version to appear.
Okay, good deal. Bruce, thank you. It's a great offer to those of you listening. And Bruce is the hot item right now. His material is very much of interest and demand. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you having me back on, Cliff. It's been great.
So Forgotten Exodus is on the Amazon page, and I guess you've seen June 1st through the 3rd, so that's 3 days, and that's in 2 weeks. So put that down. It's $1.99. Wow, it's nothing. And that includes all his illustrations and things like that. So Forgotten Exodus, and that book's becoming a real grabber because there's more discussion about these ancient hominins that are being discovered around the world. So kind of interesting stuff. So it's always fun to have Michael Hellinger on the program, and Michael is starting up his big U.S. tour that happens in the next week or so. And I was lucky to get a hold of him in between flights. He was just about ready to leave South Africa. And last time we talked about his discovery of the Anunnaki in South Africa and some of the technology, but we didn't get into a lot of the technology so what he has been measuring from some of these buildings that he's discovered. This entire interview is about technology, which is kind of fun. How this technology works, how it's measured, and what he believes the use for it was, and how we can kind of consider it for the future.
It's always great to have Michael Hellinger on the program. We haven't had him on for over a year. Last time we were talking about the Anunnaki buildings he had discovered in South Africa, their importance, and some of the other discoveries in terms of tools that he had uncovered. And this is a chance to catch up with Michael and some of the newer discoveries he's made. And we want to talk a little bit about ancient civilizations and free energy today. Welcome to the program, Michael. Great to have you back on.
Thanks, Cliff. Nice to be talking to you.
Yeah. And a little bit later, we want to talk about your appearance at Contact in the Desert in Joshua Tree and what you'll be presenting there. But let's talk a little bit about what you've discovered. Now, last time we were on, you were highlighting not only these many, many thousands of foundations and buildings, but you also had discovered their tools. And their tools appeared to have been made out of a synthetic derivative, earth-based derivative, and they were instruments of somehow some kind. But what have you discovered since then? Let's talk a little bit about the technology and what you've discovered in terms of how possibly they developed energy and used energy.
Yeah, thanks, Cliff. So let's just give people that haven't really been up to date or not up to speed with my work and the research a quick overview.
Mm-hmm.
Southern Africa is scattered and covered by more than 10 million circular stone structures, otherwise known as the stone circles, affectionately called the stone circles. These stone circles appear in large clusters. Each stone circle is connected to the other stone circles. They're not freestanding structures. They are connected to each other in one giant grid, like wires connecting them together. These walls of these stone circles are not very high. They're probably about waist height, sometimes a little bit higher, sometimes lower, sometimes flat with the ground, and you can only really see it from aerial photographs.
Mm-hmm.
The staggering thing is that when I discovered that there were more than 10 million of these, even more than 100,000 of these, points to a vanished. Yeah, I mean, that already points to a civilization that has vanished from sight that we know nothing about. No history books write about it. No knowledge or information is available other than the work that I publish and talk about in my lectures.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a huge breakthrough discovery because it does point to the southern tip of Africa as being very, very active a long, long time ago. Because most history books, if you read them, will tell you that southern Africa was a sparsely populated part of the world. Nobody lived here, a bunch of hunter and gatherers, the Bushmen, the Khoisan people that go back 50, 60,000 years, 70,000 years, whatever it is. And that's it, you know. And then a few thousand years ago, the Bantu tribes started arriving here from north, from East Africa,
mm-hmm.
and eventually making it down to southern Africa, you know, less than 1,000 years ago. And this is it. Nothing happened here. Well, nothing can be further from the truth.
Right.
This is a huge breakthrough discovery that there was a huge, vast civilization that was capable of building more than 10 million circular stone structures. The amount of labor necessary to do this would have been staggering. And the precision with which they were built is even more staggering. Now, I'm not talking about the precision that we talk in the megalithic structures of Egypt or Pumapunku et cetera. I'm talking about especially Sacsayhuaman. That's a whole another story.
Right.
Are we talking about the amount of work and labor to find the stones, to put them on top of each other, and the way that the stone structures were created, because they all are completely unique. Each stone circle is completely unique, and yet each one follows a very distinct cymatic pattern. And it was the fact that the stones in the stone circles have very strong acoustic properties. I call them stones that ring like bells, and people can go on YouTube and just put stones that ring like bells and see me ringing some of these stones. And that's just a mind-blowing experience to realize that there's a deeper purpose and a much bigger purpose behind these stone structures.
Right.
And that's where my discovery led me to conclude that we're dealing with sound and resonance as one of the fundamental reasons why these structures are built. They're working with sound and resonance, and the stones have very strong acoustic properties, and they were used to amplify the sounds of the earth at specific points and harness those sound frequencies and amplify them and create very powerful electromagnetic fields.
Okay.
And that's really what we're dealing with. We're dealing with millions of energy-generating devices because every stone circle in itself is an energy-generating device. At the moment, as we speak, still generating several hundreds of megahertz of frequency and resonance.
Okay. Well, let me ask you really quickly, because we didn't hear about, what is the estimated date
time frame for the creation of these energy sources?
It's probably around 300,000 years ago.
Okay.
That's where it goes back to. And there are various reasons for this. And the patina growth on the tools and artifacts is critical. That gives us not an exact time, but a very clear indication that it's very, very old,
okay.
Way more than 100,000 years old. We can't say it's this day or that day, but we can say, well, it's very old because the patina that grows on these rocks, once they've been shaped into tools and artifacts, that patina that starts to grow on the bare rock grows very, very slowly. And so by the time you get the patina to 2 millimeters, sometimes 3 or 4, maybe even 5 millimeter thick patina, you know that we're dealing with very, very ancient stuff.
Right.
And that was made by somebody for a specific reason at some time in our past.
Okay. And the other thing is, real quickly, you basically correspond your discovery with Sitchin's understanding of the civilization known as the Anunnaki, who basically were very high-tech aliens, right?
Right.
Okay.
In many ways, what this discovery has done, it's provided the physical evidence for what Zachariah Sitchin has been writing about the Anunnaki, their quest for gold, their search for gold, and their discovery of gold in what he calls the Abzu. And this is what I now been calling the Abzu, and the land below the equator where the gold was. And this is where they established their gold mines, because okay. All of this activity here in the ancient times is all about the gold.
Right.
You know, there are hundreds of thousands, actually most likely millions of ancient gold mines that lie scattered throughout southern Africa. There are many, many underground tunnels that we have detected and scanned. We know where these tunnels are. And we actually have detected gold deposits in many of these tunnels. They're very hard to get to because they often are in very inhospitable places on the sides of mountains and under mountains and places that only beings with advanced technology could do and get to.
Okay.
But all of this activity is all about the gold. So it coincides with pretty much everything that Zachariah Sitchin has written.
Great.
And the activity of the Anunnaki. Not only that, is that African shamans like Kreda Mutwa speaks openly about the fact that that's exactly what it is, and that it is the Anunnaki that were here mining the gold, the sky gods that came down to create humans to be the slaves in the gold mines. And he openly says that in the interview that I did with him in 2009, I think, already.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Oh. So he actually acknowledges the ruins of these people.
Absolutely. No, this is you know, I've been sitting with those videos on my computer for so long. I've got to put it out on the website, on YouTube, because we try to help Crater to make some money, but that didn't work by selling the interview because the guy was really exploited by so many people, and I tried to help him, but that sort of backfired, so I just pulled everything back and let it slide.
Okay.
But I'll have to put it up so people can view it for free and actually get the full download from Crater.
That'd be great. To
keep in mind that the centerpiece of all these stone structures here is what we call Adam's calendar. Now, that is an ancient calendar site that is still an accurately working calendar. You can tell every day of the year it's aligned with the solstices, equinoxes, north, south, east, west. However, it is out by about 3.25 degrees with the cardinal points, which is really interesting because that tells us that the calendar was built at a time when north, south, east, west was not where it is today. Because these guys did not make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And that brings up a whole bunch of questions as to what's going on here. You know, was this built before some crustal displacement or some giant reshuffle of the Earth's magnetic core or what's going on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that we know is that it was built a long, long time ago. Now, are you still there, Cliff?
Yeah, I'm listening. This is a great prelude to what we want to bring forward, which is understanding the energy generated from the technology. And of course, your talk, which I saw in a video, is free energy. So go ahead.
Yeah.
I want to let you flow with it, and I want to interrupt you as little as possible.
Well, Adam's calendar is really the flash of among these millions of ruins, and itself generates more energy than any of the other ruins. It is spectacular. I mean, there we have an electromagnetic field of exceeding 1,700 megawatts that runs horizontally, that is intersected by a vertical electromagnetic field. It's like virtually two donuts, I guess, interlocking, vertical magnetic field that runs out of the ground into the sky at more than 1,800 megahertz. And this is just spectacular. The sound frequency that is emitted by Adam's calendar, the site, is more than 375 gigahertz. Now, this is unheard of in nature and in ancient temples and so forth. Mm-hmm. So it is a very, very powerful device. In fact, many of the psychics, the channelers, the healers, and the knowledge keepers that have come to visit me in South Africa to take a tour of the ruins and Adam's calendar, they've been to every other ancient site imaginable. When I take them to Adam's calendar, it's always the same response. And it always takes me by surprise, I must say. They say, oh my God, this is it. This is the big daddy of them all. This is the one. And so I go, really?
Is that where it was all concentrated? All the energy was concentrated? Or is that just it's standing on a ley line of some kind and it's just really a big generator or something?
That's a big question. It's standing on many ley lines. It's standing on about 11 ley lines.
Oh, interesting.
And not only that, it is Adam's calendar is also known as Inzalo Yelanga by Zulu shamans, especially Credo Mutwa. Inzalo Yelanga, which means birthplace of the sun, Inzalo Yelanga.
Hmm.
He was initiated there in 1937 as a young boy and knows it very, very well. And he knows it as the place where humanity was created by the gods. So it's a very special and sacred place to the shamans of Africa. And this is important stuff to take into recognition when we start looking at our history books and how completely convoluted and filled with lies our history books are. Eurocentric, nonsensical garbage that has been put in there to distract us from what really happened on this planet of ours.
Interesting. Can you talk a little bit about any measurements you've made with some of these little generators in terms of generating energy that could have been channeled somehow, or is it like just a sound wave that travels underground and is collected somewhere and then was used? Have you been able to measure and actually get some kind of an understanding of how the energy was created / generated, distributed?
Well, this is the interesting thing. There seems to be an energetic ceiling or a grid, a network above these stone circles at about 1,000 feet. So, again, there's so much more research that needs to be done. And remember, I'm one guy. I have no funding. I have few resources. I do what I can when I can, when I've got some extra funds and time right now. Because, as you know, the Ubuntu movement has taken up pretty much my life. So most of my life is now spent on focusing on providing a solution for humanity out of this mess and the matrix of financial enslavement, while using the knowledge of the ancient civilizations and the technology they had and they used, which is basic, simple technology based on crystalline, silica-based technology, sound, resonance, and using that as tools. Using sound and resonance and frequency as a tool with their cone-shaped tools, with their donut-shaped stones and other tools, their elongated stones. So they use technology from nature, understanding nature so much more than we do today. And this is the big lesson that I've learned, and going back to basic simplicity, how we can use the technology in nature around us, from the sound of the earth, to the sound and frequencies in the air around us, to the frequencies of our brains and our thoughts, to using our own bodies, which are advanced technology in itself. It's like we are walking advanced technology.
So it's a whole different kind of a science, basically. It's a whole unknown science to us. Maybe we understand it in its most infantile form. They had it in an extremely advanced form, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. So this is all very exciting times. But what I plan to do, Cliff, is the following. In January 2018, I'm going to initiate an internship program, because there have been thousands of people around the world that wanted to come and help me do research. Mm-hmm. And this is I realize now that therein lies the collective unified power and success. So I'm going to reach out to, or open my doors here to 3 months every year to do research, intensive research into the stone circles, Adam's calendar, all this stuff here. And I will then invite people from different backgrounds, from archaeology, geology, astronomy, archaeoastronomy, electronics, geosciences, soil science, etc. And bring them all together, and even genetics, for example, and start doing research in the stone circle areas, the terraces, the 450,000 square kilometers of agricultural terraces. I mean, come on, who built them? How much food were they growing, and who were they growing the food for when there was supposed to be nobody living here?
Yeah. That's a great idea to bring people out there to work with you, because then you can start documenting some of these discoveries you've made and put them down scientifically. Wonderful.
Exactly. So it's going to be like a postgraduate course and an internship for postgraduates, so anyone who wants to do that kind of work with me. And bring in some amazing tools and technology to do measurements with and analysis, and use some of the best labs here in South Africa to do our analysis. So it's not just our perspective. It comes from an established, accepted lab and research facility or analytical facility. And so this is very exciting, and I believe that's going to bring up a lot of new information. I'm only sharing with you the tip of the iceberg in my presentation at the Contact in the Desert. Obviously, I'll be going into a lot more detail with supporting slides and videos and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, I'll be talking about the stone circles, Adam's calendar, the discovery, how it's connected to gold, the gold mining, some of the more recent events like the British Empire invading South Africa in the late 1800s. There was a very clear predetermined act there. They knew exactly what was going on, and that the people were going to discover the gold, and most likely discover the Anunnaki gold, and they needed to prevent that and secure this part of the world for the British Empire. And they did that very successfully, obviously, through the likes of Cecil John Rhodes and a few other crooks and thugs that they sent this way.
So do you think they actually found gold that was left by the Anunnaki in some of those deep caves?
Oh, yes. Now, for you to learn more about this, you're going to have to come to my presentation. I'm not going to give it away here.
Oh, I'll be there.
Oh, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. And not only has it been found, we know where some of this gold is today. And if you pay me $1,000, I'll give you a map.
That's hilarious. Hey, one of the things that I found interesting about a very recent presentation you gave is that you talk about the importance of how the ancients built their pyramids and their buildings with resonance. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about that, because I found it was fascinating. And also, in a specific slide presentation, you showed how the energy, the ley lines of South Africa line up directly with the Great Pyramids of Giza. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it's not the ley lines. It's actually the 31 degrees east longitudinal line, which is often referred to as the Nilotic Meridian, because it runs along the River Nile all the way up from South Africa. In fact, it starts on the coast of Durban, the third largest city in South Africa, a bigger port in South Africa, the biggest port in Africa. Durban starts, it's a very special and a sacred place. There are many ancient sites there as well. And it runs from Durban north through Adam's calendar, through Great Zimbabwe, which is north of us in Zimbabwe, which is the sort of centerpiece of the ruins in southern Africa. Mm-hmm. And then it runs further north all the way along the Nile until it hits the Great Pyramid of Giza. So, this is clearly a very important ancient line that these Anunnaki and whoever else was involved built their structures. And remember, people forget this. The Egyptian Empire was all about mining gold. You know, and people forget that. They get so distracted by the pyramids and the Sphinx and all that. Those are just little sidelines, you know. The main thing about Egypt is gold.
Hmm. That's an interesting point. Yeah. So were they, is it your estimation that they were down in the central or South African area mining the gold, or were there mines that were closer to their great cities?
Oh, no, they were mining the gold here. Zimbabwe and South Africa is the richest supplier of gold in the world. It's still today. You know, new gold mines going up all the time. They're raping our country. It's insane what's going on here.
Wow. Hey.
So, go ahead.
Talk a little bit about this grid system that you've discovered. Now, these encapsulated stone buildings that you've found throughout South Africa, are they in any other parts of the world, or because you talk about understanding the world grid system that, you know, a lot of sensitives have mentioned before, but there's no one in the scientific community that will acknowledge that. It's kind of like the Chinese qi in the human body, the system of energy that we have in our body. It runs naturally through the world. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, let's first define the scientific community. You know, so I have absolutely no time for anyone that calls himself a scientist that lives in a box. So, you know, remember the word science comes from the original root, which means knowledge. So anyone who's an expert in their field of work is a scientist.
Right.
So we need to discard this notion of scientists that work in these laboratories and at universities and all that. Anyone who's done their 10,000 hours of work in something specific is a scientist in that field, right? So, yeah, I have no time for egotistic, egocentric so-called scientists or academics from the tertiary education institutions and so forth, because they just hide behind the academic status and they're too chicken shit to come out and speak the truth because they lose their job. So, you know, let's just ignore those people. Anyone in the field that I work in and the people that I relate to and resonate with, you know, I don't care about what the mainstream academia has to say. I follow the clues. I do what the people in CSI do. I apply the strictest scientific principles. I follow the clues, and I reach my conclusions based on the clues and the evidence I find. And therefore, my knowledge and my information keeps changing and shifting. Right. What I say today about my discoveries 10 years ago is completely different to what I said 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But that's the journey of discovery and growth. And you will not find this in mainstream academic circles. They find a theory and they stick with it, come hell or high water, and it is the most disgusting hijacking of the free spirit and the human spirit of growth and education and creation.
Yeah, I hear you. Talk a little bit about what you have uncovered regarding the composition of the stones in these circles, because I think I remember hearing from you that it was your belief that they were almost artificial, or if not artificial, extremely special. They had a resonance ability. I remember a number of presentations you gave where you would tap on certain stones and they'd sound like bells, which means that they were acoustically created in some way. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of that?
Yeah, look, it's very important, obviously, but the stones aren't special. They're not artificially created. They are part of the bedrock, not necessarily part of the bedrock, but part of the natural rock that occurs here. But many of the stones in the stone circles, and specifically the tools and artifacts that I've been collecting, have been molded and shaped out of that stone. Right? So it's important to realize, and they've chosen the stones very specifically because of their very high crystalline content. It's very dense crystal. And it's metamorphosized quartzite, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also very rich in iron. And that gives it the quartz and the iron mixture gives it a very high acoustic property. So that's why I call them the stones that ring like bells. And you're quite right. They're beautiful. You know, that's always, whenever I bring people into my little museum here, when they come around on a little tour, and I pick up one of the stones and I ring it for them, it's the same awe and absolute, you know, blown away by this, that the stone can sound so crystal clear, like a piece of iron or a crystal. So this is why they chose the stone specifically. But remember, pretty much all the stone in the world, especially quartz and quartzite, is pretty much pure crystal. So it's very, very high energy, highly energetic, and it also has acoustic properties. It retains knowledge and information. So not only are these stone circles energy-generating devices by amplifying the sound frequencies through the cymatic patterns they create on the Earth's surface, but they also have the capacity to retain knowledge and information, just like an arsilicon-based technology that comes from Silicon Valley. And this gets, I go into a lot more detail, obviously, in my presentations on this.
Okay. Can you, would you say that there's a blueprint to what these the Anunnaki left that has been used at other places? You mentioned Pumapunku and the Giza pyramids. I'm wondering, the elders that I talk to who are the Mayan elders who I've spoken with about their ancient past, talk about the buildings being imbued with energy, with understanding, with knowledge. I mean, that's so far and away from anything we can even conceive of. And you've kind of brought it forward. If a building is conceived and constructed with these crystalline or granite properties in the stone, then they have the capacity to hold information, to hold knowledge, and then it's disseminated in some way. Do we know, do you have any inkling into how that would work? It's the same as a modern-day silicon chip, right?
Yeah. We're dealing with something infinitely more powerful than silicon chips. Okay, this is why what we call technology today is infinitesimally laughable and pathetic compared to what these guys were doing. And pretty much all these ancient structures that they left behind are actually giant machines. Just like the stone circles, energy-generating devices, the pyramids of Giza are machines that do something else. Pumapunku is a machine for something else. The temples in Egypt were giant silicon chip circuit boards. And I show that in great detail in my workshops again. And so it goes. Even to Sacsayhuaman was a giant machine. Also looks like a giant circuit board. So all these structures were constructed very cleverly, very intelligently, with understanding the laws of nature way beyond what we can even begin to comprehend, using the imbued consciousness of rock, stone, and the crystals that they used in the rock, the crystalline structure in the stones, to build these structures with, out of. And so whatever the structure was built to do is imbued with the consciousness, with the intention, and that resonates in the stones and the material from which it is constructed. They didn't have money. They didn't need to sell anything to anyone. So they did everything as to the best of their capacity and ability so it would last forever. And they did it with the best possible materials around. And this is why they built it out of rock and crystalline matter and imbued it with knowledge, information, and consciousness so that those machines could perform specific tasks that they were programmed to do. The programs are in the crystalline structure, in the silicon-based structure, in the stones, in the rocks. And this is why all these ancient sites are aligned with the movement of the sun, with the rise of the sun and the setting of the sun, the solstices, the equinoxes, because the sun is just a frequency. When the sunrise comes up on the solstice and the equinox and it goes down a tunnel through down a long passage in the stone structure and it hits a standing stone, that standing stone is like hitting enter on your computer key at that day of the moment. And that the sound, remember that light beam or those light beams that go into that tunnel and hit that standing stone, is like that light carries a frequency. It's got a frequency and a resonance attached to it. Every light beam has its own specific sound frequency. Mm-hmm. So it activates that machine to perform a specific function. And then the machine does what it's built to do, just like a computer program. And the computer program is in the rocks. So as we break down these structures, we're dismantling the machine from performing its tasks. We don't realize that, right? So all these machines around the world that are lying in pieces are still active, but they no longer can perform the tasks that they were originally built to perform. And this is spectacular. This is why the stone circles of Southern Africa are probably the key to understanding this more so than anything, any other, gateway to this field of information, because we can measure it. They're there. There are millions of them, and they all give off energy that they suck out of the earth and create very powerful energy, electromagnetic fields that can be harnessed and utilized still today. So what I'm saying is, just like Nikola Tesla wanted to broadcast energy to the whole world from his tower at the speed of light or beyond the speed of light, instantly, everybody in the world could have energy from his Wydenclyffe Tower. Right. I believe that we can do the same from the stone circles in South Africa. All we need to do is get the right minds, the right engineers here, harness that energy, and beam it out the way that Tesla was going to beam out his energy. This is what I'm going to start working towards with the research groups and the research program that I'm going to start in January.
That's fascinating. I have to ask you, though, Michael, to my mind, this technology is a different scientific paradigm. It's based on a different science. It's more of a naturalistic science, earth-based science. We know the Maya used that, probably the Egyptians used it. A lot of the older ancient cultures used it. Are we going to have to develop some kind of device that extracts the data, the information from these? Because I think that there were different types of humanoids that had a more finely developed sense to extract data and use data passing through them. Like you said, their bodies were attuned to the earth, to the cosmos, and so on and so forth. It's a different paradigm. So
it is.
So we're going to have to figure out some kind of technology that can scan these buildings and extract the data, don't you think? Or what would you say would be the approach to extract data?
Well, I guess so. That's beautifully and very exciting challenge for someone to do. I believe it's doable, and we'd probably do it sooner than we realize. Some kid with an iPhone might be able to do it tomorrow.
I love that. Yeah, that's the way it works too.
A little antenna from a car that he broke off, attached to a wire coming out of his cell phone. He shoves it between the rocks, and next thing he starts downloading all the data. I mean, it could be that simple.
Yeah.
You know, remember Nikola Tesla and all the great scientists and great inventors always made it very clear that the solutions and the answers to everything we seek are always very, very simple. So when they start complicating the technology, they're going in the wrong direction. Everything revolves around sound and resonance, and then obviously light as well, which is in that equation. So when we talk about these ancient cultures, they didn't use earth-based technology. They used universal technology. They used sound and resonance as the tool. Sound and resonance is the source of all creation. So they used the primordial tool. There is no other tool to use. This is as high as you can go up the ladder of creation, sound and resonance. And this is important for people to digest. So all the so-called technology we have today is advanced technology. It's all a bunch of BS. It's a distraction to take us away from what the ancients knew so that we don't transcend and outgrow the banking elite families that have taken the whole world hostage.
Right.
And this is where, this is where you start realizing how humanity is. Has suddenly, around 10,000 years ago, or after the flood, whenever that event may have been, suddenly we see this rapid move towards, caging people and enslaving people and putting them under rulers and kings and royalty, and suddenly money appears, and we see the whole shift away from the ancient civilizations, from another epoch, another era, another dimension, if you want to call it that, and then we find ourselves here. So this is a very important line. Remember, we can't separate anything from anything else, Cliff. Everything is connected. Mm-hmm. And this is what I constantly try and remind people in the presentations and workshops I do. Do not compartmentalize anything, otherwise you're really doing yourself a great disservice. So we cannot compartmentalize the money system from today from the discoveries of the ancient civilizations, because the one led to the other.
Mm.
And this is why the Mbutu movement, as an evolution of my research into the ancients and discovery of the stone structures and the ancient technology, phaser beam technology, the donut-shaped stones that create incredibly powerful scalar technology in the in the dozens and dozens of thousands of decibels that come out of the stone circles and out of the donut-shaped stones, the cone-shaped tools that they used for creating laser beam technology. This is basic stuff that we should be using from grade one. Little children should be using this, right? Not having to worry about electricity and conducting this and that. It's all such BS. It's unbelievable. So this all leads to the fact that we must continue studying the past, because it will give us great information and knowledge about what we should be doing in the future. And this is what I keep stressing. Let's not separate the two, because right now, you know, we can get very excited about the stone structures and the technology and the nature of reality around us, which is far more stranger than most people imagine. And in fact, the second presentation I'll be doing will be about the technology and how that affects the nature of our reality and what we think we know about our science and physics and the atomic and subatomic structure and so forth, and how that affects our world, the space around us, our solar system and our galaxy and everything around us. Is it really what we think it is, or is it something very, very different? And my latest research is pointing in the direction of very, very different from what we've ever been told. And that, to me, is the most exciting discovery that I've made in the last 2 years. And so, you know, the critical thing is, yeah, what are we going to do tomorrow morning when we wake up and 6 billion or 7 billion people in the world have no food, or they have to work like slaves and to enrich the elite that run the world, and keep doing this over and over again like a bunch of slave ants on a planet of slave ants. And this is why it's so important to get some deeper understanding of the technology and the social structure of the ancients, so that we can use it for the benefit of humanity into the future.
Can you talk a little bit about the application of SASAR technology? Because, I mean, is there some form of it used today that science has, or is it something that's still in its infancy?
Oh, no. SASAR technology was released in 2009 in the scientific papers. That's when they released it. But you can obviously know that they probably were working on it for 20 years before they, you know, released it to the public. It's the same as laser technology, where they use light. Laser stands for light amplified by stimulated emission of radiation. Very complicated word. So it's good that they call it laser. And SASAR is just the same, but you use sound waves, sound as opposed to light. What they found is that SASAR beams are infinitely more powerful than laser beams, and therefore it is it has great application and promise in the military.
Oh, God. There we go.
There we go. Exactly. So now you know who shut down the entire SASAR beam technology.
Wow.
Yeah.
And as it applies to your discovery, it's your belief that these cone-shaped tools were distributors of the energy, which I guess was the human being a form of that technology, so the energy would pass through them into the cone-shaped, yeah, into the buildings, or what is your guess on that?
The cone-shaped tool is just like the tip of a laser beam. At the tip of a laser beam, you've got a crystal through which the light goes, and then forms the beam. The crystal creates the beam, the coherent beam of light. So the cone-shaped tool is just really the same thing. It's the tip that creates the coherent beam of sound. But you can't see sound, so this is why it looks like magic. You can see a beam of light, but you can't see a beam of sound, right? So this is if you aim a cone-shaped tool through which you propel sound that is then propelled through the cone and sped up into SASAR beam, hypersound beams that distort gravity around them, that distort magnetic fields around them. That's actually what they do, not gravity, because gravity doesn't exist. That's another BS thing that we need to get out of our vocabulary. I'm sorry, but I have to bring it up right now because it's something that needs to be discussed. The everything around us in the universe and our world, everything is to do with sound, resonance, and magnetism. Gravity is just a very badly described and lack of understanding of magnetism in our world and in the universe around us. and how sound and resonance causes that magnetism. So it's important to understand how this, these cone-shaped tools create these beams, the SASER beams, that then distort or create magnetic, very powerful magnetic fields around them. And those magnetic fields then allow you to move objects, pick up objects, move them. Or it allows you to cut things, like mold things, or cut things like with a laser beam, but now you're going to cut it with a SASER beam. All depends on the kind of frequencies you push through your cone-shaped tool. Like laser beams, you can do different things with laser beams. A laser beam can be used as a pointer in a presentation, or a laser beam that cuts metal in a split second in a metal factory. Same thing, right? So just imagine different cones or different sound frequencies that are pushed through a cone-shaped tool that creates different SASER beams for different uses.
That's fascinating. Hey, you're a scientist, Michael. Can you talk a little bit about human physiology? I don't want to get into what humans were like during this time period, hundreds of thousands of years ago. I believe the humans were different, but are we utilizing our bodies correctly today, energetically, in your estimation? Or because you're bringing up a more earth-based science based on these technologies that incorporated the body, the brain, the mind, and obviously the spirit were very important back then. What are we missing today? Are we complete as humans, or is there something missing?
Well, obviously we're not complete, because you know the fact that we're only using a small portion of our DNA is a huge problem. While the real juicy stuff and the real abilities and qualities that will make us superhumans probably be able to give us telekinesis, give us ability to move through time and space, to move into different dimensions, abilities to do all kinds of stuff that we can't do. We're stuck. We're trapped in this physical realm. It's as if we were created and our DNA was coded, like a computer was coded, to exist in a slave mentality in this realm, in this reality, in these times, to be the slaves to those who call the shots. And that's fascinating, because that's exactly what it is. Our DNA is just basically a binary code, and I would highly recommend people to watch Dan Winter's work. You know, his work on the DNA is really transcendent and highly informative, and Dan Winter himself is just a genius, sometimes difficult to understand, but he seems to have slowed down a bit over the years. Yeah, but the fact that our DNA is just a computer code, a binary code that was created, and by nature it's a crystalline structure. So it's very interesting to see that the information encoded in our DNA is potentially and is potentially all the knowledge and information of all time and space. Everything in creation is most likely encoded in our DNA.
Hey, last question for you, then we want to talk a little bit about this tour that you're starting, the North American Hidden Origins Tour, which I find is fascinating. What can we expect in the future, Michael, in the next few years with your discoveries and other scientific discoveries that really begin to take us outside of the realms of physicality into the cosmos? And you talk a little bit about that. Just now you talked about when we understand our DNA and that it's software to access other parts of our reality. What do you think the big discoveries are going to be? Unfortunately, we're hardwired right now into money and all that kind of crap. And I understand your anger with all that, because it blocks us from greater discoveries, greater understandings. But what's the good stuff? What's the good breakthroughs?
Well, the good breakthroughs ultimately is the Ubuntu movement, the growth of the Ubuntu movement, and the waking up, the great awakening of millions of people every day around the world. Literally millions of people who wake up and say, I'm no longer prepared to do this. I'm no longer prepared to be the slave. Mm-hmm. And then finding the Ubuntu movement and our simple plan of action to liberate humanity from this ridiculous financial, economic, and slavery and the social structure that's been imposed on us, and presenting a very simple plan of action to achieve this. And when people see it, they get so excited that they, you know, they literally want to run out there and tell everyone else. And they do that, often causing trouble for themselves. But that's the exciting part. What I believe is going to happen is that the awareness of this fact that we are slaves to the system, that we are maliciously manipulated and controlled, is going to spread like a new wave through society in the new golden age. And that's happening already. And it's just a matter of time before a critical mass is reached. And the critical mass is not a large number. The critical mass of people across the world for this to shift and for us to be able to completely, in a very short space of time, change the entire reality and social structure of our planet, of our world around us, and how we live, coexist, how we create abundance and prosperity for everyone, and create paradise on earth for every single one of us. Every single one of us. No longer slaves to corporations. Corporations will melt away and disappear. The days are numbered. Central government's days are numbered. They're going to disappear. It's going to become a very different kind of structure with a much higher consciousness, collective consciousness, a unity consciousness, where pretty much all the evils and ugliness of the world will disappear and fade away very rapidly. And that has all to do with the removal of money from the system. So the two go hand in hand. I go into great detail in my Ubuntu presentations and the origins of money, the ancient civilizations, the Sumerians, and where money comes from and all that. So people get a deeper understanding of what it is, how it unfolded, how it became what it is today, and who controls it today. The same people that controlled it 6,000 and 8,000 years ago. So this is important information. At the same time, we will probably find new incredible breakthrough discoveries looking at the ancient technology. And if you ask me, the war in the Middle East, in Iraq and all that, it was all about the ancient tools and technology, which most people are not aware of. The Baghdad Museum was filled with this advanced technology, the advanced tools that could have given people great power if it landed in the wrong hands in the current elite. I mean, the hands of the people. And the next big museum with such important tools and artifacts is, guess where? Is in Syria, Aleppo Museum in Syria. So you see the agenda that's going on here. They need to lay their hands on all the stuff in the Aleppo Museum because it's just too dangerous. It's like having laser beam technology and the most advanced stuff at your fingertips. And I believe that the discovery of the ancient technology, the figuring out how it works and how we can use it, will emancipate people as well, because it'll give us access to free energy, access to healing and curing disease instantly, all kinds of things that we can't even imagine today. It will then provide a platform of stability and security for people everywhere to leave this insane enslavement paradigm that we find ourselves in.
Yeah, I mean, if we had free energy as Tesla hoped he could create, that would change the political dynamic around the world, wouldn't it? It'd be things would
completely
be different.
And this is why keeping people sick, when we know that we can cure every disease, we can regrow organs, we can regrow limbs, we can pretty much stay alive forever if we chose to. That technology exists. Okay, it existed for a long time since the Egyptians. This is why. And free energy has been around forever. So this is why the field of energy and medicine are the two most fiercely protected industries. And you know what happens to people that come up with a cure for cancer. They simply disappear. Or they get paid so much money that they just shut up. Or they get threatened or tortured or whatever. The same with alternative energy. People just disappear, never to be seen again. Those days are finished. Those days are over. And also through the Ubuntu movement, we have access to so many inventors that have joined us and created alternative energy, healers that cure cancer, creating free energy devices. I've been in touch with probably a dozen guys that have created free energy devices. I've seen them. I've stood next to them. It's not just some sort of dream. It's real. I know that we can cure cancer. I know that we can regrow limbs with very simple stem cell technology-based enzyme-driven stem cell technology. Within hours, we can regrow limbs and cure and heal any organs in our bodies. So this is going to happen. The moment that shift starts to move, it'll become unstoppable by the elite governments, or the governments controlled by the elite and the bankers.
Hmm.
And that's going to pretty much be the spearhead that brings in the new era for humanity, and the absolute freedom for the people of this world.
That's fantastic. Hey, let's talk about this hidden origins. You've done this a number of times, your North American tour. Coming up in May is the first phase of this. I don't have your schedule, but you're going to Canada and throughout the United States. Are you giving a specific lecture, what we just talked about, or is it something, a new message that you're presenting?
It's a combination of pretty much everything I've spoken about here. In Contact in the Desert, I'm doing three presentations. So Contact in the Desert starts on the 19th of May, ends on the 22nd, I think. So I'm doing a presentation on the ancient civilizations of Sun Circles, Adam's Calendar, their tools and their technology. And then I'm going to talk about the nature of our reality and what do we think we know about the world around us, the science, the physics that have been taught to us at school, and how the ancient civilizations have suddenly shone a new light on it, and how we need to deconstruct everything we've been taught, because everything we've been told is a lie. Everything we've been told is a lie, Cliff. This is the most spectacular thing that people need to really become comfortable with, because we're in for huge breakthrough disclosures that are going to be so big that some people have already, I've already digested it and I've become okay with it and very excited about it, because it suddenly shines a whole new light about our reality, where we find ourselves, what this world is and the universe we find ourselves in, and how it all works. And the knowledge of the ancient stuff shines a light on all this and allows us to comprehend it a lot deeper and a lot easier, so much easier to comprehend it when you approach it from the perspective of sound and resonance. It is so easy to understand everything around us and in creation, pretty much everything, right? So I'll be talking about that in two separate presentations, and obviously the technology of the ancient machines, the structures, the pyramids and all that, and how they worked. And then finally, I'll be doing a workshop, an Ubuntu Contributionism workshop, to talk about the solution for the world, the simple plan that has evolved out of the launch of the Ubuntu movement in 2005. Now, over 12 years, this simple philosophy to create a world where money is no longer needed has now evolved into this very simple plan of action that has been embraced by people all over the world, which we call One Small Town Will Change the World. And that's what we're working towards with great success, I must say. And the reason I'm so excited is because this morning I had a very powerful meeting with an ex-mayor of a very popular town in South Africa. For the first time, I've managed to break through the political shield of South African leaders, if you want to call them that, and had a long breakfast and a chat and a presentation to a very amazing, very human, heart-centered ex-mayor. Until 8 months ago, was the mayor of this town, and he was so blown away by this one small town strategy, he couldn't wait to go and start planning his presentation to the local larger municipality, where he knows they're going to love it and give us the go-ahead to convert that one town into this one small town that will change the world. So it's a huge breakthrough today, and it's basically what we're now working towards with all the Ubuntu officers and representatives and supporters around the world. Any small town of around 5,000 to 10,000 people, all we need to do is find a consensus between the mayor, the council, and the people to say, we want to do this. And within literally months, we will start the domino effect that will not be stopped by any government or any military or any army, because it is driven by the people, from the people. And once it starts, the abundance and prosperity that's created for that town by the people for themselves is so vast in monetary terms. In other words, we're using the tools of enslavement as tools of liberation, and we're using capitalism, money itself, to create a whole new structure without any opposition, violence, or resistance. And doing it so that we create so much success that no one will ever want to go back to a world of capitalism and money.
Hmm.
Now, refresh my memory real quickly. Ubuntu doesn't use money, but does it use bartering as a means to propagate?
No. It must stop you immediately. This is where where so many people go wrong. No bartering, no trading, no exchange, none of that. That's the trap we always fall into. Okay. We don't need to do any of that. We all collectively contribute our skills to the greater good of everyone. And I suggest that people that listen to this, they don't understand. We don't have enough time to go into it now. I've had a long day. I need to get on to other things I'm doing. You need to talk to other people. I suggest go online and find one of the Ubuntu workshops and watch it. Also, watch the One Small Town Can Change the World video. It's a four-minute video. Go to onesmalltown.org. That's onesmalltown.org and watch that little video. That'll give you in four minutes, a crystal clear understanding of what it is we're doing and our simple plan. Obviously, there's a lot more that comes with it, but that's a four-minute sort of spearhead to take you into what the Ubuntu plan and strategy is around the world.
Fantastic. Before we let you go, what is the website where people can get information about the Hidden Origins Tour? Give that out really quickly.
Right. So the website is michaeltellingertour.com. MichaelTellingerTour.com. Mm-hmm. And very quickly, the tour starts at Contact in the Desert on the 19th of May. Then after that, I'll move to Sedona on the 20th.
So we got cut off there. But I wanted to say that he's going to be traveling throughout the United States and Canada on this tour. So check out, just go to MichaelTellinger.com. You can see the entire tour. Michael's really passionate. Really, really passionate about his topics. And it's unfortunate that during our talk, he had sent me a whole bunch of these slides of this, some of these tools that he's found in South Africa. And the only way you can really see them now is if you go to one of these presentations. And they're very reasonable. $20, $25 for 3 or 4 hours with Michael Tellinger is really, really cheap. So, he'll be down with me this coming Saturday, the 20th, at the Contact at the Desert. So come on down. Come down and check it out. That's going to be at Joshua Tree. Go to contactinthedesert.com. Or just go to Michael Tellinger, and you can read all about some of the new discoveries, the Ubuntu program, and some of the new technology that he's beginning to measure with his very limited equipment. So, and you heard that he wants to get more scientists out there to really make some serious efforts at covering more details about this the science that he has out in South Africa. So, hey, if you can't make it out to any of these conferences, always come back to Earth Ancients. You're lucky to have me as your host because I have connections with all these conferences. But the beauty also is that all these, I'd say 80% of the speakers at these conferences, especially Contact in the Desert, I'm going to be interviewing. Again, I have an interview with Eric Van Doniken on Saturday. Giorgio Tsoukalos, Andrew Collins is going to be there. Whitley Strieber is going to be coming by, and I haven't talked to Whitley for years. He wrote Communion, he's written a lot of books, more towards the alien side, but he's also got information on, he's writing a book on technology based on his experience as an alien and abductee. So tons of material. Keep coming back to Earth Ancients each week, and you will be fulfilled in your desire to receive this information. As always, if there's something about the ancient past you want to know about, send me an email. It's cliff@earthancients.com. Let me know what's going on. Also, register for the newsletter. And I just discovered the other day that the newsletter – didn't reach a lot of people. So I'm going to redistribute it this weekend to people who didn't get it. So I'll just do another push. If you get another copy of the same one, my apologies.
I'm trying to update our server that sends the emails out, and apparently it hasn't been working as well as we'd like. So you'll be getting a copy of that newsletter. Earthancients.com, scroll all the way to the bottom, and go ahead and register. And finally, if you're interested in this history, check it out, earthancients.com.